wrist manacles like double horseshoes, ankle irons 2 inches thick, and all connected by chain that could have lifted an anchor. And Cameron and Co. had had to wear these for months. Well, I'd not have to carry them for more than a day or two, one way or t'other. And on this consoling thought, I fell asleep. Something I hadn't done, bar my brief drunken stupor following Mastiat's feast, for more than 48 hours. A dazzling light and commotion at the doorway brought me back to life, trying to start up and failing thanks to the weight of those infernal clanking manacles. The door was open. Someone was hanging a lamp from the roof beam and retiring, and as the door crashed shut again, I was aware of a swaying figure in the middle of the room, a man whose shama had slipped from his shoulders so that he was bare to the waist. He gave a mighty belch and advanced unsteadily towards me, half tripping over a large basket of bottles and food which the lamplighter had placed on the floor.
"How are you? How are you, my dear friend? My best of friends," cries this apparition, whooping with laughter. "Thank God I am well. Are you well? Ah, my good friend, my heart rejoices to see you, for the friendship I have entertained for you has not diminished. Be of good cheer, for though you are bound with fetters as Samson and Zedekiah were bound, even with fetters of brass, yet...
His voice trailed away, muttering,
And who else? Yes, Jehoiakim also was bound, and Manasseh. They were bound by the power of God, and so was Joseph, who was sold for a servant, whose feet they hurt with fetters, and he was laid in iron.
He gave another crazy laugh and almost fell over.
But have no fear, for the hour of your deliverance is at hand.
My eyes had recovered from the lamp glare, but I could hardly believe them, for the newcomer was Theodore, King of Abyssinia, and he was staggering drunk. Just as Peacock's Mr. Macready, discussing condiments for fish, could imagine no relish superior to lobster sauce and oyster sauce, so I, on the subject of bizarre conversation, had never thought to meet a crazier discourser than Hung Sui Chuan, leader of the Taipang Rebellion, who was hopelessly mad, or Mangus Colorado, chief of the Mimbreno Apache, who was hopelessly drunk. I discovered in that hut under Selesi that I'd been quite wrong. King Theodore was both hopelessly mad and drunk, and could have given either of them a head start and a beating in the race to Alice's tea party. If you've the patience and know my earlier papers, you may make comparison with the following record of our chat from the moment he plumped down, hiccuping and beaming in front of me, and spilled out the contents of the basket of food and drink. I'd had no opportunity to study him at close quarters before, for our first meeting had been by flickering firelight, and at our second his face had been so contorted with rage as to be nigh unrecognizable. Now, with his black skin, for he was blacker than most Abs, shining with sweat, his eyes staring and bloodshot, and his mouth grinning slackly, he wasn't your portrait painter's ideal model. Still, I could weigh him well enough, and what I saw through the haze of booze and confusion was not an ordinary man. He had force, no other word for it, a pent-up strength that was as much in the mind as in the body, and the body was impressive enough. He wasn't above middle height, but he had the shoulders and arms of a middleweight wrestler, a chest like a barrel tapering to a slim waist. There wasn't the least lip of flesh above his waistband. Groggy with drink as he was, I guessed he could move like a striking snake if need be. When he poured out cups of Tej, his hands were deft and steady. But the real power was in his eyes, bright and piercing despite the blood streaks and the occasional drunken tears. There was no tipsy vacancy about them. And that, in a way, was the shocking thing, because by rights he should have been goggling like the last man out of the canteen. Drunk, yes, but it didn't suit him. You felt he'd no purpose to be bottled. It was like seeing the Prince Consort or Gladstone taking the width of the pavement singing One-Eyed Riley. And he was a sight handsomer than either of them. Forget his tendency to slobber and stare, and he was a deuced good-looking fellow. 50 or thereabouts, with a pepper and salt dusting to grizzle his hair, which was braided in tails down the back of his head. His nose was hooked and prominent, and his lips were thin when his mouth was shut, which it wasn't at the moment, but his normal expression